Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll likely go friggin' nuts. And we are broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Everybody drink their drinks out of half a coconut in New Zealand. That's right. It's a fact. I read it on eBay. My very special guest today is from Canada, I believe, and her name's Claire Kewin. She's a contributor, or at least she appears in the rankings as next to Veterans Today, in my opinion and the opinion of many other top-level activists. Not saying that I'm one of them, but the premier alternative media publishing house in the world, in the Schwarzenegger sense of the world. She's also been likened with scholars for 9/11 Truth. She's been posted on that website. And one of her specialities is the death and replacement of Paul McCartney. Now, Sir Paul McCartney, in the late 60s, which may have explained why, at the height of their touring career, the Beatles decided to stop touring and never did a tour again, basically. Only did studio albums. I thought that was what an interesting little factoid. Maybe some of you will learn. So, today I would like to speak to her. Claire, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinnie. How are you all the way down there?
A bright, sunny day with a hint of a wispy breeze of Fukushima radiation. It's just gorgeous.
Well, we have a wisp of possible HAARP and chemtrail interference in a tropical storm here up in Toronto. Obviously, we're not on the ocean, so we don't get the tidal. We sort of do through the St. Lawrence down into the Great Lakes, but it's not like a tidal whoosh. But we've had rain. We had big wind yesterday. It's supposed to get really bad late tonight, tomorrow. And my Skype wasn't working right yesterday because of the electromagnetic effects and stuff. So anyway, there you go. We're suffering Sandy here, you know. Not like New York City, but still.
Well, are you getting much news about? That's a stupid question. Of course, you're getting a heck of a lot of news about this storm. In fact, is anybody getting any news about anything else?
Well, I don't watch TV anymore. I used to think people like that were weird, but I really, really don't. I just don't find I do, of course, pick up news, and I do, you know, but I'm so disgusted so often what they do and don't cover and what they repeat as news that I just don't. But I'm sure that most people, you know, that's what they're hearing about. I'm just noticing it's kind of a rainy gray day. I'm glad you're sipping your coconut drinks down there anyway.
Well, yeah, with a straw, a silly one.
Pardon?
We're drinking it with a silly straw.
Oh, how fun. Fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, my work, obviously, I mean, a lot of the things that people now do research on, and some of the characters that do research, to be honest, it sounds silly off the bat. You mentioned the Paul is Dead phenomenon, about which I did a lot of research some years ago, and I was actually shocked. I thought that it would be one of these things where finally I'd find, you know, a big meme, a big conspiracy weird thing that was just so ridiculous, and you could really watch how people overdid the uncareful mythologizing. Like, I think I see this, and which is a form of explaining something, but it's not a very careful form. And then I found, though there is that involved in the early clue structures and what people were trying to maybe make sense of, it turns out that the case has gone way beyond that now. So, yeah, I'd love to discuss that, because that was a shocker for me. I was a Beatles enjoyer. I was a fan in that sense, but I wasn't one of these people who you know, was into all these weird things. I thought it was just a stupid rumor. So, yeah, I'm glad we might get to discuss that, as well as maybe 9/11 or mind control, or those are the things that people maybe they know about, but they haven't done a lot of research on it, or maybe they have. But, you know, I'm glad it's a chit-chat show. So take it away. Are you there?
Hello? You sent me a video this morning about the hurricane and the satellite footage and imagery of the chemtrails basically buffering the hurricane so that it would miss the kind of southern United States, like Florida and what have you. It would in fact move further northwards and hit the United States capital and New York and what have you, and travel upwards through Canada. And you can see the storm actually get much, much larger as they add these chemtrails into it down in the Gulf of Mexico. And then you see it not grow larger, but simply go around the chemtrails being laid up further north on the continental U.S. that buffers the hurricane, still maintaining its size, around so that it comes upwards on the top of the United States and Canada in perfect correlation with that giant snowstorm that's coming in. And then right in the middle now, you've got a big snowstorm hitting as a result of the hurricane, isn't it? Now, has anybody else seen a hurricane blowing snow before?
I don't know. The interesting video that you're talking about, I forget the title, maybe you have it in front of you. It also showed radar data that were quite stunning to me, because you can actually see like long lines of EMF radar data show up and disappear, show up and disappear. So it's not like pockets of things. It's like these long lines, like one over Tennessee, just this line of sudden radar data of this weird long line. I mean, it's very strange. And this person was saying there's the chemtrails adding to the storm intensity, and then pockets of EMF interference, probably through a HARP type event, HARP being High Altitude Auroral Research Project, which isn't research, it's linked to the Navy, and it was in fact designed by its designer, openly talking about the issue that he intended this to be partly for weather modification. He thought it would be a good thing. You could bring water to regions that didn't have it, and, you know, maybe militarily rain on the opposite army or something like that, right? But the fact is, once you have these things in play, you have to be careful that your weather is natural, because, you know, I mean, there's a kind of a big lie out there. So I think it was a really good video. Do you have the title of it for the listeners?
It's called HARP Engineering Frankenstorm, Hurricane Sandy Caught on Satellite and Radar. So hold on a second, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just give you the name of the YouTube channel there as well. Rev Michelle Hopkins. Rev Michelle Hopkins is the name of the YouTube channel. HARP Engineering Frankenstorm should come up with it. Hurricane Sandy Caught on Satellite and Radar.
Reverend, I think. I think that's what, you know, so she's Rev, R-E-V, Michelle Hopkins, yeah.
Yeah. That, or she's a Rev illusionary.
Yeah, I think that's the case. It's not perfect. And you know, I don't expect perfection. I've gotten to the point where, you know, I came from a scholarly background and artistic, so I was used to excellence, but not always perfection. And then I was, you know, I was used to, at least in scholarly works, to see fairly careful writing, fairly careful source backup, that sort of thing. But you do also get hypothesizing and reasoning about what's found. And so I, you know, when I began to look into citizen researchers of all types, some of them scholarly, some of them not so scholarly in background, I was a little shocked at the quality of the writing and some of the quality of the backing up. But when they are right, they're right. And if you can kind of get over the idea that, well, anybody with something to say, it just has to be valid because they said it, or on the opposite end, if they didn't say it exactly right or they're not the very best proponent of the idea, still, look into it because they may at least have brought to your attention something that you needed to know or in some form. You know, they may not have, I always say some of these people are not their own best advocates. It doesn't mean the work is all bad or, you know, and that's how I do my research. So just, you know, want people to know I'm fairly careful, but I'm not dismissive anymore on the surface. I used to feel that.
Claire, I can relate to that. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who absolutely adore their research and what they do, but just can't stand them.
Yeah, there's personality. I wasn't even going for the personality issues, but that's so much a problem. And then, of course, because people are so many types, you know, all very often the people who naysay conspiracy research or that which falls under that umbrella in the broadest sense, once you get aware of certain conspiracies, literal plots, literal killings, literal events that were covered up, you also learn a lot of other stuff. You don't just learn about that. You learn other aspects of what scientific discoveries are out there, what's going on in other ways, you know. And some of these people are doing excellent work, but the way to, of course, tarnish them in the popular culture myth idea, propaganda, is to suggest that because some of them have serious personality quirks, that means that they can't think. And, of course, I mean, even other conspiracy researchers do this. I deal with some every day on my inbox who are excellent about certain things, but boy, oh boy, you mentioned that this other person had a point, and they will, you know, think that person is your hero just because you're saying intellectual honesty requires that we acknowledge this point or that it was valid given where the research was at the time. They're not necessarily a disinfo agent. I think there are some. But that in general, that those terms are thrown around in the so-called conspiracy research community a little too loosely because of people they don't like. You know? So it's a yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah. I'm on side.
Well, I look at it this way. The thing that's really destroying humanity is competing against each other. I think the thing that will save it is collaborating with each other. You know, let's kind of come together on what we agree on. Like, for example, Claire, are you at any point planning to show up at my door with a submachine gun and a black ski mask with some sexy fisticuffs and take me away to a FEMA camp? Do you ever plan on doing that?
A red ski mask, maybe. No.
Okay, we'll take that as a no.
But then there's mind control. And I think
my point is, that said, there ain't anything really that we're going to fundamentally disagree on. So let's come together on the points that we do agree, and the points that we disagree, we can leave those for another time. Perhaps until such a time when we've averted a crisis where people in black ski masks and submachine guns will come to our door and exterminate us.
Right. Yeah. Well, the come together reference is interesting, of course, because that's a Beatles thing. So, yeah.
Well, you sent me two Beatles songs this morning, so I had John Lennon songs. He seemed like I've never heard those songs before, and it seemed very proto truther in a way, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I don't recall sending you some songs this morning from Lennon, but in fact, I don't think I did, but my little signature on my email is Give Me Some Truth. That is one of his songs. That is one of the Lennon canon. I think that he actually would be one of us. I think that he was such a person. He was aware. Actually, if you want to call it original McCartney, or if we just leave it as McCartney, was known to have called Mark Lane of the JFK assassination early fame, right? A researcher, lawyer, and asked him many, many questions about his book, Rush to Judgment. He wanted to know. These guys were not, dumb minds. They were... I'm trying for clean language. You did mention that. Dumb donkeys. They were not, and especially Lenin, who read voraciously. Like Lenin was he was an intellectual artist. That doesn't mean his art was always intellectualized. Some of it is, but very much an artistic metaphor guy. But he was very knowledgeable. In his later years, actually, he also got into UFOs. He was into the occult stuff, partly through Yoko. She was very into the Japanese numerology and tarot reading stuff as well. But he wasn't just into the esoteric. He in his last interview for the Playboy interview, he mentioned, for instance, mind control. He actually mentioned, well, you know, Joe, I forget what the name of the interviewer was, Harry or something. Well, Harry, come on, let's get real. Art Linkletter's daughter ends up dead through a window from a supposed LSD flashback from 10 years before, right? And he said, now the CIA gave us LSD and we did something with it, right? They wanted to use it against us and we, you know, use it. He knew. And also by the late 70s, the information...
Oh, I'm sorry, Claire, we're coming to break. We'll be right back with Claire Kuehn. That's K-U-E-H-N. C-L-A-R-E is the first name. Listen to us after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles. But I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Right and left are symmetrical on the puppet master's tentacles. The two sides are identical. The troops are not ejectable. We're forming a prodigy and making the Jordan come out of me. It's like recording Nostradamus, taking a tour in the prophecy. The real American gangsters make the poor live in poverty with the corporate dictatorship in a foreign economy. Give to the orphans on TV, cause a good portion of a lot of these starving children died in the name of a corporate monopoly. And the reporter reports it as if the story's a comedy. So I says the economy's so depressed, someone give this thing a Prozac, right? I'm ignoring hypocrisy like the war isn't happening. Like Guantanamo Bay has a real reason for torturing half of these terrorists, as they used to call patriots who supported the colonies. Reforming fiscal policy, support the philosophy that there's criminals purposely
Ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about the criminals crippling the dwarfing economy, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 5 till 7 Central, 3 till 5 Pacific. I think it might even be like midday till 2 p.m. and even Hawaii time or something like that, you know, if you're like singing on Waikiki with an iPhone or something like that, you know. You can tune in with the app at the AmericanFreedomRadio.com. How about them apples, huh? Or coconuts, as the case may be. My very special guest is Claire Kuehn, and we're talking about John Lennon. And have you noticed, Claire, that almost every little conspiracy, in some esoteric fashion, seems to link into almost every other?
Yeah. There are different kinds of links, depending on the situation. But, of course, there's the human link, of the types of things that people find themselves part of or witnessing or waking up to. And then there's the actual interlinked, if you want to call it broader intelligence service stuff. And then there's, you know, the corporate world and parts of it. You know, I mean, again, depending on the situation, the people have multiple affiliations. You know, Timothy Leary, for instance, was interviewed by Walter Boert and admitted he was CIA, which was not known. I mean, it was long suspected. But his version of what he thought he was doing was helping. Did that mean that he knew of all the other stuff going on? No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean he's bad enough, yes. But again, you know, it's this kind of, and it's not always in those groups, but I mean, it is sort of like, and he's hanging out with Lennon, promoting this idea of tune in, turn on, but then he always had a drop out. You see, so it's a kind of, Yeah, they are linked. We have, what, 20 minutes and then 5-minute breaks? That's the way the show goes?
More like 15 minutes and then a 4-minute break.
Okay, just curious. I forgot what you said. So I was just making a final point there when the last 15 minutes was up, which is that Lennon, when he was talking in that interview, was making sure to get the point in. See, and that's what we need to do, is that in whatever forum we're, or group or family meeting, you know, we can't bring up all the stuff all the time or we'd be a downer, but that not to let certain BS come through. Like to say, well, you know, actually, there's something on that you might want to look into. And that's what he was sort of doing. And his idea was, he said, look, I did thousands of trips in the on LSD in the 60s, and I never had a flashback. Like he's not sitting there going, you know, oh, maybe 10 years later, Art Linkletter's daughter, you know, died of a flashback. And the guy, by the way, who was with her that day was later... with another woman in another place where she also ended up dead. So, you know, not that he knew that at the time. That hadn't happened. But this was the end of the 70s, early, like 1980 and late 70s, when the House Senate Committee on Intelligence had revealed, limitedly, but had revealed the existence of hypnosis and drugging and mind control programs, plus a lot of very awful kill weapons and diseases and stuff that have been developed by or through the CIA and or naval intelligence and or, you know, other things. And they began to, as soon as they first came out as, we're great patriots, look at what we've done to support our spies. And then when it was found that, in fact, they were using unwitting Americans, albeit people from the lower caste, you know, prostitutes and you know, average street people as part of their experiments, but also students and whatever, the broad consensus was beginning to form of, wait a minute, this means you're experimenting on Americans unconsentedly? And they began to then try to cover their tracks. And that's how these things come out. People come out proud. There's a big book on this, but more the drug stuff, and it I forget the name of it, it's quite famous, but it veers away from the issue of just how bad this is, really, because they keep making it sound silly. There were a lot of experiments that were just silly. I mean, they, you know, that didn't work. But already in 1947, they had a woman on record that under hypnosis would have, you know, emotional. Hypnosis is an emotional thing. It gets you into a state where you're not really using your whole judgment capacity. You're not really aware of everything that's going on in your world. And emotionally, if you can be driven to tap into anger or resentment, you'll tend to believe more and more and more of it, like Othello in Shakespeare, where Iago feeds him all this nonsense, and he begins to then do it himself. He begins to create a situation where his wife, Desdemona, cannot look good. Can't, and he ultimately murders her, husband-wife killing. That's Othello by Shakespeare, and it's brilliant. And what happens is these people under hypnosis, they can be induced to feed into some emotional state where they would be willing to kill or whatever their best friend. And they said in 1947, great success. So if in 47 they already have this stuff, then... you know, how far developed was it by the Vietnam War, by the 60s, by the 70s, 80s, 90s? You really have to think about the people living through those eras where some events might have been related, like Sirhan Sirhan and possibly Mark David Chapman, Lennon's supposed killer, that, you know, that where that kind of thing could have been used. And you have to say, is there any evidence? There was. By the way, about Lennon's killer, it's important to know the official police reports, official police reconstructions, I think in Newsweek, anyway, were that Chapman was on one side of the alcove, and he was shooting forward, kind of forward to his left, and that Lennon was somehow shot in his left shoulder blade straight through the heart from that angle. But the bullets actually went into the doorway on Chapman's right, And the only angle where that would be true going through a man who's walking forward and he's shot through his left, through his heart, horrible stuff, but this is, you know, what you're dealing with in these sorts of things, would have been the doorway man. The doorman was on the other side of the alcove. Or there was supposedly a fellow who was a supposed maintenance worker who was in a little alcove within the alcove and could have shot in that direction. So, yes, maybe Chapman got off a shot or two, but Chapman might have been believing he did the killing when that may not be the case. So it's important to kind of know a little bit about these cases to say, well, they might be related to these other things. I happen to really be a fan of John. I think that John's attempts were far beyond, you know, I'm an entertainer. That's not what a real artist is. They're a producer of visions and opportunities for your emotions and your ideas, right? And so the geniuses among them that also get political, they're naturally suited to that role. And I think he would be one of us. That's to answer your question of before the break. I think he would be one of us right now. He'd be out like Jesse Ventura on shows saying, ah, come on, Pierce Morgan, wake up about 9/11. You know, that kind of thing.
It's my contention that there's an Illuminati bloodline, right? And it's also my contention that there's like a truth of DNA pile as well. Kind of coursing its way through all of our veins, you know. And one question I like to ask my guests, because the answer is quite interesting as to how they turn out. What did your father do for a living, Claire?
What does my father do?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, my father and my mother, my mother's now dead, but they were, and he still is, teachers at a community college. My mother was a teacher of philosophy, English, art and cultural political history. My dad, and women's studies at one point. My dad is a teacher of, has taken over some of my mother's courses in creativity, art, thinking, philosophy, moral philosophy. But his background was more in French language studies and in geography, Canadian-American relations. He's a real news hound. I was not. I was actually really really, really trepidatious of news. I stayed away from news shows. They always disturbed me. I wasn't a conspiracy aware, politically aware person. I just always felt that, you know, people should really try to get along. And then I woke up to particularly the absolute argument, scientific argument of Dr. Costello about the Zapruder film of the JFK assassination. He's discovered that the optical perspective, which has been known since the 1400s, okay, I mean, this is not something that's new science, that when you correct for the lens distortion and you account for position of camera movement, there are straight edges of buildings that are all fine. You know, they go into true, they become flat, just as they should, but certain things then become untrue. In other words, they're optically impossible on any planet. And thus, the film itself was not merely edited, but faked, that it was a composite image. And I used to work in dark rooms, and I know, of course, you can take an image, let's say a car with Kennedy in it, you can mask out around it, repeat it across several frames or several images, and then you put different backgrounds, and you could put Daffy Duck or whatever, and you're actually treating the image as components. That's what they did, so that they could shorten the timeline of certain events, take out actions and where people were, and all kinds of. So that film, the interesting thing about it is that the conspiracy researchers into the Kennedy assassination have been rather nasty, well, until fairly recently, about the claim that the film was fake, because they were so caught up in the back and to the left impression. And the irony is, as is often the case with truth, that the back and to the left was itself an artifact of the film faking. The real issue with the film is that there's everything else is wrong. So that what they looked for in the film and said, oh my gosh, this is proof of the faking, and ran with for so long and were so attached to, was itself throwing them off. They still then intended on using that film. And So they'd reconstructed roughly what had happened to the body and where people were, and it didn't match the film. When you realize the film was changed so radically that it is not, in fact, the events of the day. There's a little bit left in, I mean, but it's really not. Then you see that you shouldn't rely on the film, but rather on the reconstructions, and then you're off to the races. Everything else you put together from all your other evidences suddenly can fly, right? So the people who did the work, Fetzer and Costella and Healy and Lifton and so on, and Jack White, who's now dead as well, just died, when they came out, they were actually accused by other researchers of themselves being disinfo agents for getting rid of this film. But Costella's arguments are a scientific law reality. He actually even accounted for things that you didn't need to, just to show that he'd accounted for them. So, and there are issues with the blur doesn't match in certain places, which shows that it can't have been a real image, original camera, original, that was edited around. So when I woke up to that, and I realized I truly understood the argument, and I understood what those were saying against it, and how that didn't work scientifically, that they had to fudge everything in order to make their arguments, I thought, oh my gosh. And then I went on and became now what I am now, which is talking to you about these other things. The answer to my family is they were both teachers, but one more into the arts and philosophy, and the other one more into the news and social history stuff. Does that, and language, does that help you any?
Well, there's always some kind of an incident that wakes somebody up and activates them, and in some cases, not. Some cases, you're just kind of born into a situation where it's kind of inevitable. Other cases, you see people who have worked themselves into the system very, very nicely and have actually done very well in their particular fields, whether that be finance or teaching or inventing or whatever. Sure. And then something bad happens to them, something really, really bad, which shatters their faith in the whole system.
That wasn't me so much. I mean, my mother always took pride in, at least intellectually, being open, radically open, not silly, stupid, but aware that you have to keep your ear to the ground. Sometimes the people you thought were kooky are not. They're telling you something. So, you know, that was sort of me, but this event catalyzed that.
Well, let's talk about catalysts after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest, Claire Kuehn, K-U-A-E-H-N, I think. We'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends, smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no.
Welcome back.
Oh, no.
Welcome back,
no,
ladies and gentlemen. We want to know which side you're on. Are you on the side of truth that will hurt and then heal? Or are you on the side of lies that will comfort and then kill? It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And recently I've been getting a lot of guest suggestions, and I've been sending back all these guest suggestions with archives of these people that they're suggesting, which I've already interviewed on this show before. Such is the variance of the guests. It's kind of hit and miss, but keep sending them in, because at the very least you'll be able to listen to an interview you didn't know existed. Like with my very special guest, Claire Kuehn. Then this has turned out to be a Christmas cracker of a one, with the lightning and the thunder and the chemtrails, and it's turning into be a very good show indeed.
I hope you mean that. We've kind of been rambling, but managed to get a few points in about these cases, yeah.
Well, when you talk about conspiracies, you understand that there is a flow and a tangentiary existence, kind of like it's almost like we're in a psychedelic holographic universe. You can't expect things to flow in a straight line.
No, they come in Fibonacci spirals. I've really gotten into mathematics lately, so I threw that one in.
Now, Now, Fibonacci spirals, is that a kind of pasta?
Could be, yeah. Yeah, no. my back, just, I guess we should back up, because as a speaker, I should just say, I was at the Vancouver 9/11 hearings as one of the presenters this past June. I was a last-minute speaker because the people who were more closely allied with what I was speaking on all refused to come. So I was brought in as a person who knew the work fairly well of what they were covering. I was there to talk about the work of Dr. Judy Wood, the physicist who has posited that directed energy weaponry may have been used to take down the Twin Towers. The consensus of the hearings themselves overall went in a different direction. Isn't that the way sometimes? But what I was presenting was the validity of the questions that Wood was answering, and that there are things that she raised which do need looking at, whether or not they were used on 9/11. That electromagnetic frequencies, there is quite a lot of, although disparaged, but quite a lot of support scientifically, it seems, for weirdness, weird situations that come up with electromagnetic frequencies. And so because of that, because she's raising that is a thing we
need. Hey, Claire.
Yeah.
Claire, you'll be surprised and quite happy to know this, but your voice is kind of cutting out and distorting a little bit on the line just as you started talking about electromagnetic frequency weapons and such. Isn't that funny?
You're kidding.
You're still a little bit higgledy-piggledy with that. And I would put that down to perhaps overloads on the system because of the hurricane on the East Coast. Maybe, I don't know.
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, you're cutting out absolutely terribly, Claire. I apologize about this. Hopefully, American Freedom Radio will be able to reconnect you. Can you still hear me? Yes or no?
Oh, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Well, we'll have to ride out the storm, won't we?
Boy, can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're coming back nice and clear now.
Okay. So the issue is that these things may...
Wait. Check that. Not coming through nice and clear.
Maybe I should change topics.
How about this? I can't hear you very well. So what we want you to do is hang up the phone and call us back into the board, and I'll take your call through that way. Hopefully reconnecting will solve the problem. So if you've got
a pen and paper?
Yeah, I can hear you, but it's really choppy.
Okay. What number?
Okay, 218.
Uh-huh.
339.
Uh-huh.
8525.
Okay. Gotcha. Right. Okay, I'll be back.
So just quickly hang up and ring us back, and we'll take your call in there. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know, for some reason this hurricane ain't on my mind, and unsurprisingly there's some bad stuff going down, you know, and a lot of people they give conspiracy theorists a bad name. I'm one of those people. Where you make up something just basically off the top of your head that may or may not be true, and it's just like invariably sometimes it does turn out to be true, but I don't know, you do have to wonder about this. Because the work of Dr. Judy Wood's been very, very, very attacked highly. And as we were talking about before, some people are not their own best advocates. There's a lot of that going on with Dr. Judy Wood, perhaps. I could explain to you off the air about that, but I don't really want to go into it. Because, these private conversations with activists and stuff like that, I believe they kind of should remain at least semi-private. Unless, you know, they continue to attack you or anything like that, then you come out and all guns blazing. But you just basically sit back and collect your information, and eventually you present it. My very special guest, Claire Kieran, is back.
Hi.
You're on the air.
I'm on my landline. Does that help?
Oh, no, no, no. It's still really bad. It's just do you have a, if you have a cell phone number, you could run to the email there and flick it through to me, and we'll see if that might work.
I don't have one, but we could change the topic.
Change the topic to what? How to talk garbled on radio?
No, I meant if it's interference that isn't due to the storm.
The interference due to the storm? Yes.
Not due
well,
to the storm.
I mean, we have a prime example right here, don't we? How could we clarify that this is due to the storm, though?
That's what I said.
It would be interesting to find out. So let's have a look on Google, shall we? What's the name of the hurricane here? Is it Tracy or Jacinda or some other girl that you don't like the name of?
Hurricane Sandy.
Cindy. Oh, okay. Like Crawford, Hurricane Cindy, phone
Sandy.
Disruptions. All right, let's Google that on up. Worst of cell phone disruptions yet to come, the FCC says. That's from Hurricane Irene from 2011. Flooding and power outages from Hurricane Sandy led to internet and phone service disruptions from the New York Post. Here's an article here. Flooding power outages from Hurricane Sandy lead to internet, phone, and service disruptions. Water welling into southern Manhattan drenched one of the world's densest communications nodes, taking out popular websites and forcing carriers to reroute international traffic. As commercial power was cut to the southern tip of Manhattan, data centers and phone companies' facilities in the Wall Street area were forced to switch to diesel generators, and data centers that failed to keep running on backup power brought down news and gossip sites Gawker, Huffington Post, and many popular New York-based blogs. So, you know, this is there's a lot of infrastructure in New York that actually affects the globe and stuff. It took out the Huffington Post.
Yeah, I know. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we've been able to hear the whole time, but it's still remarkably choppy. I'd like to continue reading this article, actually, that we've only really got a minute left till break. And by the way, Huffington Post is now back online. Their web host Datagram Incorporated said power was out and flooding in their basement was preventing their backup generators from pumping fuel. Internet connectivity from three providers was also down, Datagram said. Verizon Communications Incorporated, the biggest phone company in the region, had some of its nodes in downtown Manhattan flooded, shutting down phone and internet service. And further uptown, data centers hosted in a telecom hotel that spans a whole block and houses Google's New York headquarters were reporting outages as well, apparently because backup power failed when commercial power was cut Monday evening. There's a lot of ramifications to all of this, you know, having your website taken down.
I
can assure you, is something to have absolutely destroyed. And so we've not only had the outages in New York, but because of the infrastructure that's based there, we're now having, possibly outages and things like that that are now affecting the United States, including phone and internet connectivity. So I wonder if we can even take some other callers on this and see how their internet and phone connections are holding up. And Claire, you can remain on the call as well. And
sure.
Maybe, just maybe, the technical issues will resolve themselves. There'll be some yellow jacketed individual out there in the driving rain and the pouring sleet and the snow and the what have you, precariously balanced on a rickety ladder, trying to put two incredibly dangerous high voltage electrodes from a transformer together. Let's hope they do their job and keep it safe, y'all.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. I was technically plagued 2 hours in talk radio.
gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I'm having some technical issues on my side, so during the break I'll be having to reset the whole system here. I'm not sure if this is related to the thing or whatever, just the technical issues on my side, and I've been advised by the listeners that Claire's is coming through just fine. So we also have another caller in, and I'm just bringing up the caller line now, ladies and gentlemen, and I apologize for this, but although you guys will be speaking, just bear in mind I won't be able to terribly hear you. So, Claire, I'd welcome back, and also Chris from Florida. You guys are going to have to be the impromptu talkers of the show at this point.
Okay.
Oh, hey, Vinny, this is Chris, and I don't know if you can hear me. I just heard in the last break that you wanted to check to see if you could receive calls, and our people were experiencing technical difficulties in the States. I have been, and especially with Google, actually, trying to get on with Chrome. The browser hasn't really been working, and as far as I know, it's been pretty operational today. I think a lot of this stuff is legitimate. I just caught the show right when you were asking about calls, so I'm not exactly sure like what the running topic is, but yeah, there has been some definite issues.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
yeah, you're coming through clear.
Oh, good.
I can hear both of you.
In fact, it seems to have resolved itself, you know? It's like you go over the hump and there's a little bit of a meh, but it comes back and it's all G unit, as my pimp daddy would say. Now, Claire is the guest today, Chris, and she's comes from a scholarly background, and she has been talking about JFK, John Lennon, and mind control, and a number of other things.
Ooh, that was my favorite topic.
Yeah.
Which one?
So, Chris, I just wanted to kind of thank you for your call, and we'll kind of let Claire proceed because the technical issues seem to have come to an end.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man.
Okay, no problem.
Right. Claire.
Hi. Yeah, I wonder if it was the topic.
Let's do a test. Electromagnetic weaponry. No, not breaking up. No. Okay. It wasn't okay. That.
The thing is that the research there veered away from that as a possibility in the consensus of the people who were attending the conference. But that I was attempting to raise the issue of what is seemingly weird about EMF, what is valid about some of the initial observations of Wood, whether or not the ultimate explanation will be that or something else, but that there were things being noticed that have actually made their way into the explanations that have come out on Veterans Today now about something called a neutron bomb. It's not a regular nuke. It's not like, you know, you get this sort of big blast of heat. There's heat, but the flash is so brief, only about 10 to 20 feet wide. You wouldn't see it. It wouldn't necessarily. It is a whole bunch of technical issues. There's an article now about it on Veterans Day, it's most viewed article right now, called Mini Neutron Bombs, a Major Piece of the 9/11 Puzzle. And it involves the issue that it's possible that Wood was underplaying the heat issue, maybe not intentionally, but that there wasn't so much like big blast of heat the way you would find it, or massive radiation the way you would find at, you know, just the blowing up of Hiroshima or Nagasaki, but rather it's a different kind of a thing, because the products in the dust that were found by the USGS service, they were chemists, and they weren't looking for physics issues that were related to nukes. They were just doing work on the dust, and they found all these nuclear products, and the dust didn't see that as nuclear products. That's not what their training was. So the work seems to be legitimate, and so it must be accounted for. But in my talk, and there is a Vancouver PowerPoint that I did, I outlined some of the interesting things that Wood raised. So particularly on the weirdness of EMF in its own right. In its own right, it's a very interesting issue. What is physics and what have we? So we were talking about Fibonacci spirals and pasta. Kidding. Fibonacci spirals and the nature of the universe and mathematics. And so those are some of the things that I was raising in addition to the 9/11 question there. So that was another thing that I did this past summer. This earlier in the summer. But about Lennon, if we can cover the McCartney thing, that would be good, because I think it's something that's laughed at, and it's something I laughed at, and I'd love to actually bring it up. Is that something you'd be open to, Vinny?
I intended for this to take up the entire second hour, and random stuff to take up the first hour.
What in the first hour?
Random stuff.
Okay, random. All right. The chaotic randomness of the universe. How about back to the mind control? There's an amazing little short video, about 11 minutes long, at Brass Check TV. It's also on YouTube directly, but Brass Check TV has it listed there. It's called Brainwashing in Jonestown. Now, Jonestown is an interesting question because, of course, the official story there is that there were several hundred people who all committed suicide in 1978. 1977-78 is when these revelations about mind control were coming out in the Congress, U.S. Congress and Senate. And there were several hundred, thousand, I think, or 2,000 people there at Jonestown. And the head medical examiner for Guyana actually went there, and his report was that most of them died by injection and gunshot. They were not, in fact, he found gunshot wounds on many. Also, there were no media allowed in the area, no civilians around in the area. And meanwhile, the special forces were ringing the area, supposedly to help escapees. But then suddenly the body count goes up by several hundred and then several hundred more. So the official explanation was, there were several hundred behind a shed and we just forgot to look there. I mean, it gets ridiculous. So for anybody who wants to actually find some of these brass tacks about that case, there's a very good little video that was put up October 2012 called Brainwashing in Jonestown. And it's not just, your average even circumstantial argument. It's some of the forensics questions. They found an entire shed with, I think it was about 5,000 doses of methamphetamines in it or something. It seems to have been a combination of mind control and experimental torture sites and stuff, as well as, of course, people who were disadvantaged. They picked them up off the streets through the Child Protective Services, people who were Black and Latino particularly, the forgotten of the culture, you know. And they were also buying babies or getting babies from local Guyanese women who wanted to get rid of the babies. So this was and there was a shootout of the congressman who went down there, and they managed to finish everybody off. So I think it's important to know what the medical examiner who actually was there said, because by the time they were allowed in as news services, the bodies were so decomposed that, fingerprinting or toxicology reports couldn't have been done. The toxicity of the body itself undoes the ability to do those tests. Of course, a gunshot wound might have been able to be tested because it might have hit bone, but none of that was done. So I think it's important to know that these things are quite real and they're quite ugly, and they can't be not going on now. Webster Tarpley suggests, for instance. Are you still there?
Of course.
Oh, okay. It sounded so silent, I thought, where's Vinny?
Well, you're intensely interesting, Claire, that's why.
Okay, because I mean, you know, just like I'm trying to be slow, I'm trying to be, you know, open to you can interrupt me any time. I'm just chatting.
I'll tell you what. Take it at light speed, if you will.
All right. Okay. You want me to really? You do not want me to go at light speed. I'm usually people complain. Okay. I won't.
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, I can go on. I know about a lot of these things. They're really, once you've done deep research, you've found the key pieces of evidence. You can go very quickly. Bing, 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 bang, bang. This is the argument. This is what, you know, leaves it out. This is where, and it's very hard to absorb that. But unfortunately, you know, that kind of, you have to eliminate a lot of what you would broadly know and might be so, and then say, this is the argument. Just as I said with Costello, this is the argument. This argument cannot be defeated. It doesn't mean that you don't have other arguments that might be defeated, but once this one is in place, that's it, right? The case is made. It doesn't mean that there isn't more to know about it or you can't get at it some other way, but the case is made. If there's an absolute argument for something, then that's enough. I mean, it's enough to answer the basic question that's in people's minds, you know, was it a conspiracy or not, or was there a cover-up or not? Jonestown is a really interesting one because I find the mind control stuff very fascinating. I think it's some of the creepiest material because it involves people who, you know, are misrepresented as, you know, just being happy or just having a regular role to play. And, in fact, they're so manipulated that you know, I have a real sympathy for the victim. And I think that we need to do justice to these people, not just in this case, to say, you know, like, this is real stuff. These people are truly taken advantage of. Webster Tarpley has made the point that the Guantanamo seems to be basically a torture center like this, only one that's institutionalized, and that out of that come people who have been convinced and or brainwashed and or mind-controlled and or torture mind-controlled. There's layers to become American agents or fanatics. Once somebody, of course, feels, either if they're brainwashed into being an agent or if they become so radicalized against the horrible captivity that they're usable by others who are agents, you know, and to be the fanatic dupe, to be the fanatic terrorist. So it can work either way. You can create a terrorist by making them consciously know that they're going to go out and be one and whatever, or you can create it so that a person, it becomes so radicalized against your bad treatment that you're very convenient and predictable. A lot of people don't think of that, and we think only of this sort of mind control. But anyway, Jonestown was horrible, and I think the timing, 1978, when it occurred, is key because that's when this House Senate Committee on Intelligence was revealing mind control operations. And so this one would have come out, you know, these cultic operations. Also, some fascinating work on serial killers. A lot of serial killers have big connections. They are themselves crazy crackpot sickos, but they have connections where their proclivity is used, and sometimes some of the killings are pinned on them. And sometimes, you know, that really there's rings that are doing killings or that they're part of. They might do two killings and then the rest of them were doing six. And when you really study the cases, you find that the group that was doing those things is still active afterwards and does similar things in the region that you don't really know about. But that serial killer gets pinned for all of them. Now, they're still sick people. But that how people get used is a very important thing to ask, and this will lead in eventually, of course, to the issue of the Paul McCartney question, but I would send people to the Dave McGowan sites. They're not perfect, but Dave McGowan has done a massive amount of work on the serial killers and also on Laurel Canyon and the, shall we say, mind control, also mass propaganda element through Hollywood and music industries in L.A., and his work on Laurel Canyon is called Inside the LC, The Strange but Mostly True Story of Laurel Canyon. It's not perfect. It's about 21 different web pages. Some of them are more, you know what I mean, they're more a little bit, they're more conjectural, Some of them are less conjectural. And you get a feeling, if you stick with it, you're not really picking on everything. You learn a heck of a lot. And his work on the serial killers, I think it's, well, he's got a book out, actually. Dave McGowan has a book on serial killers, and he talks about David Lee Lucas, Lucas and Otis and the relationship to Mexican cults. They were claiming in the late 80s, mid-80s, that they were involved in Mexican cults, and Lucas himself claimed that he was delivering drugs to Jonestown. But anyway, Otis, who's a sicko, very sick stuff, you read about it, but he said, yeah, I got involved in this cult. It allowed me to do the killings, but basically, they were running a satanic cult down there. Well, who is they? And then no one believed them, right? But by the mid-90s, they were doing forensics in that area, and they found mass graves and satanic stuff in that Mexican region. Now, he claimed that wasn't their particular cult, that they were involved in a different one. But when you kind of wake up that there is stuff found, we do know this stuff is existing. Some of it seems to be its own. You said how it gets connected. Well, there's people religiously. There's people, just through sick proclivities, people who run through intelligence. There's intelligence infiltrating the sickos. There's sickos infiltrating the intelligence. It's back and forth. But it's his work is really excellent on the serial killers. He has a little pop quiz that he did. It's not really a pop quiz. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek about serial killers. And you find out, my gosh, all the connections that they have. I forget if it was Lucas or another one that was, no, it was another one, who actually was able to arrange at 15 or 16 when they visited D.C., Washington, D.C., a White House, special White House Oval Office tour. So obviously he knew somebody.
Wow. Well, let's talk about more after the break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Coming through on the other side in just a few minutes. Don't you go changing. And if you'd like to, join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. New Zealand time for this week. But next week, daylight savings on November the 4th, so it means on the 5th of November, remember that local time in New Zealand will change to midday till 2 p.m. instead of 11 a.m. till 1. It's one of the interesting things that happens with time zones when you're broadcasting live to a different country. My very special guest is Claire Kern, and we're talking about mind control, and we're going to be leading into Paul McCartney and how he was replaced. And we only have two segments, and I've not watched a number of documentaries on this, including one that was based off tapes that were allegedly sent by George Harrison.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that's just info. We'll get to that.
Yeah, and the Winged Beetle as well.
Okay, so I'll just very quickly tell you which places to look for this stuff about. I've already gone over the Laurel Canyon thing. You also want to go to Newsletter 65 in Dave's Web, daveswebe.cnchost, that's C-N is Nancy C, host.com. Newsletter 65 is the quiz on serial killers. It's very informative. And the other page is called Something About Henry. There's Something About Henry. And it's the page that goes over sort of information on this Henry Lee Lucas and Otis and stuff. So I'm just sending people places they can look into. It's really stunning. Now, McCartney, you wanted to say, I try not to lead with the idea this is a fact he was replaced. This is a conclusion based on a number of things. The Highway 69 Entertainment that put out that last testament of George Harrison seems to be a disinfo group. That does not mean, of course, they have no truths in what they say. They've also come out with that thing about Obama, the, you know, truth from my real father thing, which links Obama into supposedly the very left-wing Marxist group around this guy who was also doing mind control. Now, the mother does, his mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, does seem to have been linked to this guy. But the idea that this guy's his father doesn't seem to hold up. So you get this half-truth to pull people away from a true picture of what the birth certificate were, you know, and all that stuff about Obama. Now, Highway 69 Entertainment came out with a thing on Paul, and it came out right when the big movie, the first big movie by a person calling himself I Am a Phony, P-H-O-N-E-Y, on YouTube, had been out for a couple years doing leaks about the McCartney question. And when he came out with his big movie, The Winged Beetle, linking McCartney to Crowley, magic, that sort of stuff, out comes this movie. And it came out from Highway 69 Entertainment. And it has an actor doing the voice of, and it's really bad, the voice of Harrison. And it also has a lot of errors about what went on. But it also, it does bring in MI5, but it tries to make, supposedly if this replacement occurred, if the replacement occurred, let's say, it tries to make the second McCartney look really fine. You know, he's a good guy because he came into the Beatles and he helped out. And isn't he great? There's that element. And that they were just afraid that all the fans would kill themselves if they knew that McCartney had died. And MI5 guy tries to help out. And that's the sort of the nicey version of the movie you watched. Now, the reality is a little different. The case actually involves not merely clues on albums, clues on album covers, statements made. It's not merely a circumstantial or mythic case. There is now a group of two forensic scientists who work with photo analysis, and you do know that it is possible to analyze someone's face if you have excellent quality, certain kinds of photos. It can't be really bad lighting. It can't be they're tilting their head really wildly. You can't have a lot of lens distortion. But if you have certain qualifications in your photographs, you can, in fact, tell who somebody is. And it's based on proportions. Now, if I gained a lot of weight, lost a lot of weight, you'd be able to tell. You can tell that the cheeks are rounder and there's a double chin or whatever. But certain proportions do not change. If you have a good quality photograph, frontal, there's the inner eye, there's up to the top of the forehead, there's down to the base of the chin if the mouth is closed. There's a general jaw width, unless they're clenching their jaw and it can go a little wider. There's the temples, there's the basic head height, things like that. This group of forensic scientists thought that it was a bunch of bunk, just as I did. And they went in 2007 or 8 in Italy. This is another way they controlled the news, right? Sort of like it happened over in Italy, and then it comes out in Wired Italia, the Wired magazine for Italy. And then, of course, that can be kind of contained. It's in the Italian language, and only the people following the case really know about this. But anyway, so they did this thing, comparison of photographs, and they found two very excellent, straightforward, frontal, nicely lit photographs of Paul McCartney in 1966 or before that, like before the end of 66. And they did the kinds of craniometric analysis and facial analysis proportion, leaving room for a couple of millimeters change, whatever. But basically, you know, 2/4 to 3/4 to 7/8, that's sort of a measurement on these medically less changeable factors in a human facial skull situation. And then they found a lot of photographs, of course, 67 after. And they said, not only do the two before 66 match themselves, and the ones after 67 match themselves, they don't match each other, extremely do not match each other. And second of all, there are a few photographs in 67, particularly on the Sgt. Pepper's album, even correcting for the lens distortion stuff, where it doesn't match either. What they've done is they've actually doctored the second guy so that they've rounded out the jaw massively, and then it sort of looks rounder, but it's anatomically impossible. It'd give you the impression of a shorter, rounder face. And a lot of people don't realize quite how authoritative that sort of analysis is. They don't understand. This isn't about do you have an exact skull measurement. What this is given all of these proportions, if suddenly 5/8 becomes, you know, 3/4, and the other one that was 6/12 becomes half. Oh, sorry, that is 6/12 is half, but I mean it becomes a 5/8 or something. These are radically different measurements. They're not close, and they're a combination that makes a face. So this work has come out. Now, no one's challenged it. The reason is, you know, usually it's dismissive. Why would we bother to even challenge it? But it's well argued and it's well presented, and you can go and understand it or choose not to understand it. They also, and having been an artist, I understand proportions and what can and can't be changed in a proportion without changing all the other stuff, you know, in a certain way. And then you would notice those changes. They're so that's how we actually tell what a person looks like. Our bodies, our minds look at proportional changes. So, yes, he was replaced. Now, that's the forensics argument. Is it DNA? No. He has refused to come out with fingerprints or DNA or anything like that. We do, in fact, have, however, women who have claimed babies with the original Paul, who submitted their stuff. They got this response back, and they kept coming back that, no, he wasn't the father. Now, you could see it as these women are just fraudulent, you know, but there were several of them around the world that you know, like, the pretty good chance of really having had McCartney's baby. These guys were not exactly using rubbers, you know. And some of them even had the handwriting analysis. The handwriting analysis came back as this was a right-handed guy who wrote the letter that said, you know, and they said, he's gotten someone else to sign all this stuff, and he's gotten someone else to do the blood test. But as a matter of fact, it seems to be that he is someone else. It's a very different question. And, of course, what's his name? The press manager, nice guy for the Beatles there, Derek Taylor, he came out and gave one of these blandishments that was worthy of Alan Dulles about the Kennedy assassination, because he came out and said, well, we don't need to provide proof of who he is, because you don't need to prove who you are. You don't need to prove that you exist. You just exist. And so, like, well, of course, that's not true. If there is a huge question, you can, in fact, prove who you are in a number of different ways. So a lot of people thought it was so silly. So I'll back up. In late 66, the Beatles were, in fact, very tired of touring. They were very overwhelmed by the crowd craziness. Quite real. It was a new phenomenon. They were, you know, pawed, grabbed, mauled, whatever, wherever they went. And at the end of August, at the Melody Makers Awards, Paul McCartney was seen. There's footage of him. And after that, there's this hiatus where supposedly Paul stayed in England for a while and then supposedly went down to Kenya, France and Kenya, down with Mal Evans, who was one of their two roadies, along with Neil Aspinall, who later became head of Apple. And he goes down to Kenya in the Kikishi Highlands, and he's hanging out, and then he comes back, and there's footage of him. Now, I would say he very much looks like a different guy, but there are people who claim that, no, it isn't. So anyway, he comes back, and suddenly Mal is firing George Kelly, the longtime butler of Paul, not letting the second Paul see George Kelly. Mal Evans ended up dead in 1975, telling a friend that the book he was going to publish about the Beatles, he was supposed to get royalties. He was going to get royalties, so he was going to publish it, and he was also going to get royalties for having helped Paul, the second Paul now, write Fixing a Hole in Sgt. Pepper's. And then he ends up dead by the LAPD. His ashes are lost, his book goes missing. Very strange. So anyway, so back in 66, they are hanging out, and of course, John is down making a movie in Spain. Ringo goes to meet him. George Harrison goes out to India. The story when they came back was, we were so sick of touring, we don't want to tour, and we don't, we were just relaxing. Here we are. But as a matter of fact, in January or February 1967 already, they put out a little ad in their Beatles magazine, Beatles fan book, that was only coming out in England at the time, saying there's a rumor going around London that Beatle Paul McCartney has died in a crash, and we just want you to know he's fine. Now, some people see that as an early planted, you know, suggestion, but it seems rather to be, especially if you know the forensics, seems rather to be that there was already this rumor going around. Some people knew and people were suspecting, and the photographer who wangled his way onto the movie Help in 65, I think it was, 64, 65, his name is, he's Greek, I think. I'm forgetting his name right now. He actually has come out in I Am a Phony's movies talking about how everyone knew. Everyone around them basically knew. But, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, and they, like, are you going to expose it? Are you going to make a big thing? And we all felt bad for, you know, for them. He actually had a break into his house to steal negatives. And he claims it was Paul McCartney, the second Paul McCartney's man, you know, coming in and trying to find the negatives. They didn't find anything. He says, I have them in my box. We do know that almost all materials, including the early photographs of the Beatles, which very clearly show the original Paul as a very young man, that were taken by Astrid in Germany, have just been bought up mysteriously. They were on auction, and then suddenly they're off auction. So it seems as though this second Paul is buying up stuff. Now, the movie you watched was basically an attempt, of course, to say, well, you know, he's a good guy and he's trying. And I think that's actually part of the story. I think that people who would hate, you know, we have to realize kind of what the psychologies of the people involved would be. I mean, obviously, if you're now part of a band and you're actually trying to hold it together, they always claimed that Paul was the one trying to hold it together. They've tried to fudge the story a little bit. You get comments, for instance, by Jeff Emmerich, who does not have this in his book, but in an interview, his wonderful book. He's got an amazing book on the engineering of the Beatles and stuff. But he was their sound engineer. And he commented, and this is in the I'm a Phony movie, The Winged Beatle, he comments about how the Sgt. Pepper's sessions were just weird. I mean, they were like different people. And it was there was a lot of sadness. And, you know, things. I think things were just getting bottled up. And it was really Paul that kept it going. Now, what were they so sad about? Just not touring? You know, so again, you can make a circumstantial case with those things, but once you know that it's gone beyond that, then you can see that they were, in fact, trying to live their lives. Now, John Lennon actually admitted this in one case. He did an interview in 1970 about the Beatles' breakup, and very fascinatingly, at about, I think it's about 13 minutes in, maybe 30 minutes in, I'm not sure, he's talking about, you know, the idea that everything changed after Brian Epstein died, which is the middle of 1967. And then, you know, and of course, some of them say, oh, everything changed after 66. Harrison said that. And then he said it was like, well, it was, you know, everything changed. And then he starts talking about India as if it was his going to India that was changed. But the context was Paul before that. Well, Lennon was talking about, you know, the Beatles breakup in 70, and he said, you know, well, everything changed when Epstein died, blah, 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 which he was very affected by. And then he said, you know, and I was the kind of guy who, you know, they made a suggestion, oh, write a song. Oh, okay, well, write a song. Okay, I'll write a song. And I think that that was actually the mentality that he really did go into in the end of 67, like, oh, okay, I'm going to just try to deal with this, right? And well, after
Have you noticed, Claire, that when you're trying to do the right thing for other people, you can sometimes wind up getting used by them? You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, my very special guest, Claire Kieran. We'll be right back. Oh, yeah. I'm Matt Jimmy from the 27 Club. Some kind of way out of here, said the winged beetle to the big Rothschild spider. AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, you can join us in the chat room there. And if you want to talk after the break with myself and with other listeners from around the world, you want to make a friend, you know, or something like that. We've had people calling in from Aussie who apparently just live just down the road from each other and went and visited and all that kind of stuff. Join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Give us your Skype details and we'll add you into the call. So, Claire Kuhn is my guest. We only have one final segment to wrap up the Paul McCartney saga, which I think is a remarkably insufficient time frame in which to do this, because there's so much information and so much disinformation that needs to be cleared up that it is an impossible task. So, that said, what do you reckon you'd like to leave us off with, Claire?
Well, I can first of all say that I did a much more extensive interview on this issue at radiofetzer.blogspot.com. You can type my name in, C-L-A-R-E. It's the Irish spelling, not the French one with an I. So it's C-L-A-R-E, not C-L-A-I-R-E. And last name is Kuhn, as you said, K-U-E-H-N. And you'll find that show, the last three segments particularly. And it goes into much more detail about the different clues and the forwards and backwards and all that stuff. But what I will say about this case is that it is a genuine case. One of the problems with the two Pauls is that the first one had a very small palate. He had very crunched teeth. His upper teeth, lower teeth were very crunched. Now, that doesn't mean he had a terribly small head, but for his head size, his teeth were smaller. Larger. And that they make the point, these forensic scientists, that in order to correct that, you would need palatal surgery, which was available in the 60s, but it was massively bloody. It would take a year with a head brace to recover. They only did it for people who had severe trauma or, you know, severe need. You wouldn't do it for a singer. And historically, that's eliminated because we know he was given interviews with no head brace on. So it's eliminated historically from the possibilities, yet he shows up later with okay teeth. That's another issue. But regarding this stuff about everything's related and what these issues are, if you see that it looks I was actually talking about John. So what he said in this interview was he says basically once Brian Epstein died in 67, mid 67, he says and we made an album after that. I don't know what it was, Sergeant Pepper's. I can't remember. Now of course. Sergeant Pepper's, Epstein was very involved in. John wouldn't get that wrong. And you can actually hear Yoko giggling and John's voice goes down. You can just hear the hint of a smile. And then it's gone. And then he goes on and he talks about Epstein. And then he talks about Magical Mystery Tour, which did follow Epstein's death and which did have him also in trauma reacting out of just getting things done. So the I am a phony. So John, in a way, he did say. But as you said, you can end up getting used. And I think once something is happening, once it's sort of going on around you, and you've acquiesced part of it, you can get caught up in it, and then you don't dare say something, or who's going to believe you? And then you get defensive, and you end up actually trying not to tell the truth, but you're sort of telling the truth through the songs, but you're not really going to admit it publicly. And I think it also made him very much more aware of conspiracy and of agendas in the longer run, because he was part of this one. No, so you have to ask about the current Macca. What is his role? Well, there is some suggestion that he may have been, in a sense, an interested fan. He may have been already the body double for Paul. There's a whole thing about who signed which.
Hold on. Wasn't there an American Bandstand competition for a Paul McCartney lookalike?
There was, and some people suggest that perhaps he was found through that, although it's unknown. That stuff is probably unknowable right now without further revelation. And on November 9th, there will be a big movie coming out from I Am a Phony, which he's been building up to since 2006, supposedly it's called The Revelation, and it will be out supposedly making the fuller case. One of the things about I Am a Phony's work that is troubling is that he does do some minor deceptions in it. He doesn't just give the original audio of everyone's interviews. And I think the reason for that is it's an extremely artistic movie. Not just to apologize for it, but I think that the intention is to give you the feel of what would it sound like if these people had sort of told you the truth. So he does some fancy editing with some of the interviews. But other than that, it's a fairly straightforward movie. At the very end, he shows a page from Mal Evans's lost book, And it does look legitimate. It looks like a very old book. It has Mao's style, absolutely, of speaking. He was not a particularly intellectual guy. And it has his sort of phraseology. It really strikes you as an old book page with all the hand corrections and everything, typeface. And in that book page, if you pause the movie and you look at it, and then you pause it about 2 seconds later when he has a close-up of the bottom, you do your research. If you actually go beyond the initial impressions of, oh, this is BS, or, oh, this is great, you actually watch it as a research tool. You can find that this page seems to be a legitimate page from a supposedly lost book from a murdered guy who was murdered by the same guy who helped cover up Bobby Kennedy's death in the LAPD. This page discusses the period when Paul came back, and I'm on the radio. I'll be out in about 10 minutes. Sorry, somebody just asking a question here. That he's discussing at that page in the book the issue of, I had to go and tell George Kelly that he was fired. I felt horrible, and he doesn't actually say Paul was replaced. What he says is the clinic in Kenya did a great job. Everyone was surprised it was really happening. John was in utter horror. Of course, John then is described as lashing out at Pete Best. Somebody made the suggestion that Pete should be told. This was the previous drummer to Ringo. And John is reported in this page of saying, no, no, I don't want Pete involved. No, no, I don't want it. And I think that that's the powerlessness. And you can't control what's totally going on, or you feel you can't. You lash out at an issue that you feel you can lash out at, right? So it has a real ring of, genuineness about this. And Mao is talking about how overwhelmed he was, that he hadn't protected them, and these were his like his children. He's a very protective big guy. He's called The Rock. They actually, abused him a little bit, misused him a little bit. But he was really their stable guy in the group. As a supportive thing. So I think that this new Paul, because he has long been talking about, people have said that he was into Crowley. He was definitely into William S. Burroughs and the avant-garde. He gave an interview for the Process Church stuff. He was heavily into the magic scene, according to several people close to him, that even if he really wanted to be in the band, did he help murder Paul? Was it an accident? Did somebody else do it and get him in? Did he find out later? There's a lot of questions about that. And yet, he's a Beatle. I mean, in the end, he contributed to what we have. And he is, so there's a tragedy in his life, though there's also a complicity in, of course, even if it wasn't in the death, in the making of the cover-up happen, you know. So it's kind of like we get a lot of music because he was still there. I mean, that somebody was still there holding the band together. But at the same time, there are things that are culpable. You got to lay the correct blame on. Like, for instance, you can blame the Nazis for certain things. You don't blame them for others. You can blame Henry Lee Lucas for certain things, but he shouldn't be wrongly accused of certain deaths. That kind of thing. It doesn't make them an all-good or all-bad figure, you know. So the I'm a Phony thing on November 9th is supposedly the big revelation, but the case is already made through the facial forensics. In fact, it's already made, and they do explain very, very clearly what their arguments were and what they eliminated and how shocked they were and what they accounted for in their medical forensic, you know, visual accounting job. As facial forensic scientists. Now, there is a guy, and his name is, I think it's Gary P. Anderson or something, who wrote The Walrus with Paul. And he had talked to a friend in the body farm who started to claim, you know, they do the body test, right? They strip you of all, it's ugly, but they strip you of all your skin and stuff. And they do, like, craniometric analysis without the skin on. And this guy was saying, you can't analyze somebody's identity with the skin on. Well, that would mean you can't do any facial recognition software. You can't tell who you are by looking at you. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous. The issue is once you strip the skin off, you can do a bone-for-bone comparison of some other, you know, image of a person, or if they had a lot of fat or whatever, you can do that. Or But it's a different kind of an analysis. Once they have their skin on, you can adjust for has more fat.
What about maybe a DNA analysis? Has anybody asked for it?
Well, as I said, the only acknowledgement of his DNA, no one has gone and done it. You'd think that somebody would have bothered or stolen something from a cup of coffee, but they haven't, is that these women who have had babies by Paul claim they have. They all have findings that, you know, it isn't the father of their baby. And some of them have quite good circumstantial cases that this was the baby of Paul McCartney. They were known to be around. So, and that it was a right-handed guy who signed the letter. So in that sense, we do, but we don't have any offered.
Oh, well, I guess maybe that could be something to look for in the future, you know, maybe a public campaign.
November 9th, supposedly, I Am a Phony is coming out with this big revelation. And look up the forensics.
10 days, ladies and gentlemen, and I Am a Phony will give his big, fat revelations. Isn't that fabulous? Claire,
I hope
you're fabulous too. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Vinny.
We have to do this again sometime and do a couple of hours where we just talk about Paul McCartney so we can lay out as much as humanly possible.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Vinny.
Thank you. And hopefully you don't get washed away in a tidal current of storm surge. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, as well for listening in. We'll see you again sometime.